Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is part two of our discussion with Mark Blumenthal, who is executive director of the American Botanical Council, ABC. They put out the Herbalgram, and they got a website at herbalgram.org. And the subject is last week's shocking revelation that has spread through the media like wildfire, that New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman is taking on major retailers, GNC, Target, Walmart, and Walgreens, issuing a cease and desist to get them to stop selling herbal supplements after tests found that many of them didn't contain the herbs listed on their labels. So we're examining the truth or potential dubiousness of that statement. And Mark, you've been very, very measured in your response to this. You're basically saying, hey, you know, the methodology is, we don't know. We just don't know. The methodology may be suspect from what they have disclosed about their methodology of testing. Maybe, just maybe, their conclusions are unwarranted. Others in this field, such as the Council for Responsible Nutrition, they've not been as measured in their response. They issued a press release calling the Attorney General's actions, quote, a sting, unquote, and described them as reckless. And they say that this smacks of a self-serving publicity stunt under the guise of protecting public health. And I know you don't want to go there, but go ahead.
I will go there.
Go there.
I can understand why the Council for Responsible Nutrition, a leading trade organization, would make those kind of comments, and they're not necessarily untrue. I don't have any evidence as to the motivations of General Schneiderman. It's not my job to try to do that. But it might be part of my job just to comment on the overall situation here. And I believe as a taxpayer and as a citizen that we have to expect from our publicly elected officials the highest standards of quality with respect to how they comport with the various types of activities that they have to deal with, particularly when they are using science and technological issues as a basis for making their regulatory or legal actions. In this case, I would expect the Attorney General's Office of the State of New York to have the highest quality scientific verification, substantiation, and support for their position before they went out and took on four major national retailers, or anyone else for that matter, a small corner mom and pop. It really doesn't matter. It's fairness. And the fact of the matter is, as we discussed previously, it is the belief of the American Botanical Council, an independent science-based research and education organization with considerable expertise in the area of herbs, herbal medicine, phytomedicines, and related subjects, the opinion of ABC that in this particular case they relied solely on DNA methodology, which is known to be inadequate for testing of extracts, and reportedly in the media some of these products appear to be extracts, not just herbal powders. So we have a situation in which they're using a methodology that may not be adequate or fit for purpose or appropriate for use in this area. They are also not doing peer review. They're also not doing controls in their studies. And they're also not going to a second or third analytical laboratory to use similar methods or the same methods to confirm their negative results from the first time. All of this should have been done before they even contemplated sending a cease and desist order. And frankly, out of fairness, I would add another log to the fire. They should have contacted the companies directly through certified mail, give them 10 or 15 days to respond, tell them what's going on. And it's possible that the scientists and the attorneys from the companies could respond and say, hey, look, these are herbal extracts. They don't have DNA in them, or whatever the response of the company might be. Give them an opportunity. Let them show their quality control checks and their quality control laboratory research data or whatever. This was never done, to my knowledge. And so you have a situation where it appears that the Attorney General is acting, as the CRN said, recklessly, That may be a tough word to use. It may not be, in my opinion, the word I would use, but I would say it would not be acting in the area that was scientifically as responsible as I would want an elected official to do, especially with that much power, the top law enforcement person in the state of New York.
Well, you know, it gets worse than that because this event has launched a torrent of pent-up criticism against the natural products industry. I'll read you a headline from the Washington Post, which I presume you've seen. Quote, Americans are ignoring the science and spending billions on dietary supplements. So what they're saying is that if indeed the Attorney General is right, a series of supplements made by four companies that are discount brands are adulterated or not up to snuff.
Brands or house brands.
Whatever. But let's arguendo, you know, as they say in law. Let's assume that these allegations are true, and by no means have they been proven to our satisfaction. By extension, what they're saying is the entire supplement industry is irresponsible and that Americans are being duped. And here we go. This is from Center for Science and the Public Interest, David Shart, who is senior nutritionist at the Center for Science and the Public Interest. I never believe what they say because they have...
By the way, David's an old friend of mine. I've known him since we worked on the McGovern campaign with Bill Clinton, so in 72. David's a good friend.
Good, and I'm not going to launch an ad hominem attack on him, but he's on the wrong side of this because here's the deal. Center for Science and Public Interest has never met a supplement that they've liked. They have a very strong anti-supplement bias, and his statement is, quote, the evidence for these herbs' effectiveness is sketchy to begin with. That kind of goes against your whole life's work, Mark, because you're basically there to do research on the traditional use and the modern applications of herbal and phytonutrient supplements. And he says it's a sign that this loosely regulated industry is urgently in need of reform. Now, here's the agenda. They say that a federal law passed in 1994, we know this law, it's called DSHEA, has exempted herbal supplements from following stringent guidelines that drugs have to follow. The New York Times says the chief architect of that law was Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah. Hatch has accepted hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions from the industry and repeatedly intervened in Washington to quash proposed legislation that would toughen the rules. And so here we have it. We have, on the basis of these allegations about four companies and a handful of products, that the entire supplement industry is suspect, the American public is being duped, and we need more stringent regulations, and Senator Orrin Hatch is on the take because he's getting paid off.
Okay, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
Let me say that except for Dr. David Kessler, who was FDA commissioner at the time when the DSHEA law was passed in 94, I believe this has to be checked, but I believe it's true that virtually every FDA commissioner since Dr. Kessler has acknowledged that the agency, the FDA, has adequate authority to regulate herbal and other dietary supplements. The issue is not whether the agency has adequate authority and adequate authority and the tools. They have the law and the regulations on their side because they have more than DSHEA. They have the Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act, which DSHEA is basically an amendment to, as well as other laws, the Food Safety Modernization Act. The Bioterrorism Act plays in as well regarding traceability of imported stuff. And the fact is, it's really a question of enforcement. The law is there. We don't need more regulations. And by the way, they don't need to be regulated as drugs because in many ways, cases, these are not drugs. Vitamin C is not a drug. Bilberry extract, when it's put into a capsule, is not a drug. Neither is ginger or garlic or turmeric or many of these things. If you look at the top 20 or 40 best-selling herbs in the marketplace, and we publish an herb market report every year in Herbalgram, where we do look at these things, you can see that about a third to a half of these herbs that are sold as dietary supplements are conventional foods or spices or traditional foods that have been used traditionally in various cultures as a food, not as a medicine, that have also been being used as in some kind of a concentrated form for dietary support and for health support, which distinguishes them still from synthetic or natural pharmaceutical drugs, which are usually one single chemical and regulated appropriately by a different type of system. So what happens here is we don't need more laws. We don't need more regulations in many cases. What we do need is full, robust, assertive, and uniform enforcement of the existing laws and regulations that we have. If that were done, then we would have probably a better playing field out there for these companies who are selling both the good products and the company who are selling the bad products, who would probably be taken off the market or whatever. And that's what's been happening. The FDA under Margaret Hamburg, who just announced her intention to step down this week, since Obama came in, the FDA has gotten much more assertive, much more aggressive on the dietary supplement regulations. They've been sending out letters, warning letters. They've been closing companies down in some cases. They've been confiscating materials. But this is a big industry. There's over $25 billion in supplements, over $6 billion in herbal supplements alone in the United States. And the FDA is, 11, 12,000 people, dedicated public servants, but they have to regulate 25% of all the consumer goods sold in North America. Foods, drugs, cosmetics, dietary supplements, medical devices, biological drugs. That's a huge array of material to have to have responsibility for, and they just don't have enough budget and man and woman power to take care of all of it.
Well, okay, so let's go to the accusation that this is an unregulated industry. I mean, you say that the rules are in place, but that I know many of the manufacturers of supplements. I know a lot of people in the industry, and they really go through very rigorous self-testing, GMP. They're regularly subject to having to submit paperwork to the government, the state, and the federal government. They have to have clean facilities. They have to test, or sometimes they're involved in voluntary testing programs where they test the potency and purity and whether there's toxic elements mixed, arsenic, lead, cadmium mixed in. So what's going on there?
Okay. There's a GMP rule that all members of the herb industry and supplement industry must comply with, the Good Manufacturing Practices Rule. The last 5 years, all companies of all sizes have had to comport with this, which includes establishing proper identity and authenticity of your raw material, then checking for reasonably anticipated contaminants, which could be, as you mentioned, heavy metals. That can also be agricultural chemicals. They could be microbial content. All that has to be checked with the ingredients before you even put them into a capsule or tablet or mix them together to put them into a capsule or tablet. So there's much more stringent controls of the manufacturing process nowadays than there was, say, 10 or 15 years ago. That being said, and let me just be clear about this, lest it sound like I'm making some kind of defensive argument for the entire industry, which I'm not doing. Yep. I'm also the director and the founder of the Botanical Adulterants Program, with the American Herbal Pharmacopeia and with the National Center for Natural Products Research at the University of Mississippi, which is an FDA-funded center for analysis of herbal dietary supplements and development of methods for testing herbal dietary supplements. The three of us have put together a program to educate industry about adulteration, which is the act of either substituting an ingredient with a cheaper ingredient or combining an ingredient with a lower-cost ingredient to the benefit, economic benefit of the seller, and to the economic detriment, or even sometimes the health detriment of the buyer at the end of the day, depending on if it's, we're talking about a manufacturer as the buyer of the material or the end consumer. The fact is that adulteration happens sometimes because of accidents, because of poor training or quality control problems, or just straight-out accidents. People just make mistakes. But also, we have seemed to be observing in the last years an increase, what appears to be intentional or economically motivated adulteration of raw materials and extracts, where people are actually cheating, and our which is fraud. And so our program, the Botanical Adulterants Program, it's on the American Botanical Council website, has a special homepage for it. You can find it at herbalgram.org. We've published 5 articles so far about adulteration of black cohosh, adulteration of skullcap, adulteration of bilberry extract, adulteration of so-called grapefruit seed extract with synthetic commercial disinfectants. We're communicating to industry what to look out for, what's being adulterated, and we have a lot of more stuff coming down the pike. The point being that we are experts in and really working on trying to fix some of the quality control problems from within, because there's that's where the expertise is, independent. So I know that there's problems out there, and so I recognize that. I'm one of the first people to do that. The question on the table today has been whether this AG action in New York is actually a reflection of those kinds of problems, because that was the suspicion, was what motivated the test and their program in the first place, or does it look like it's a big problem because they misused and over-relied on a testing technology that might have been adequate to test all the products that they tested? That's the issue.
Right.
I'm not saying there's not problems.
Exactly.
In this particular case, there may be a problem in how they went about it.
And it's hard to know from this particular regulatory action. So what's the take-home message for consumers? You know, the Attorney General says caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. And I think to some extent, you know, you and I would agree. I think there are quality considerations when it comes to nutritional supplements. Is there any guidelines for people to follow? They could certainly use herbalgram.org as a potential resource. I know you don't per se rate the companies or put out an approved and non-approved list. What are some of the hallmarks of excellence in supplements?
Well, when doctors and pharmacists ask me this question, I always say, well, you're a scientist or you're trained scientifically, so why don't you look and see which ones of these products are clinically tested? Usually, not always, products that are clinically tested tend to be some of the better quality products. After all, people aren't going to invest in clinical trials for their product if you're a company CEO. If you're not using materials, they're not going to give some kind of benefit in the first place. So a clinically tested product, or a note that the product's been clinically tested, is often, or all, not always, because you never, I don't want to use absolutes here, a good indicator that the product is reliable. Also,
well, give me an example. An example might be, you know, there's certain ginkgo biloba extracts that are standardized, and they have names, they have designations, right?
Correct. They're trade names, and one of them is the leading company in the world. It's like 160 or 200 clinical trials on the leading German extract, which is sold over here in the United States. Those are products that people can usually rely on, because in many cases they're the pioneer product in the category. That was the first ginkgo product. Everything else is pretty much a copycat.
And that's not going to be like the Solgar product or the Twin Lab product. That's going to be something that cuts across brands and maybe an ingredient in a premium product from 100 or 150 companies.
Well, that's true for a product like Pycnogenol, which is a branded ingredient that's highly clinical tested. That's true. That you can find that under 50 or 100 different brands. But with respect to the ginkgo extract, and I'll be very honest, and they are members of my organization, supporters of mine, so for full disclosure, but Nature's Way has a product called Gink Gold, which is the Schwabe EBG761.
That's a highly tested, really a standard of the research,
The world's leading ginkgo extract, and generally speaking, these products tend to cost more than a store brand or a house brand by definition. You know, that's just a no-brainer.
But and I have to say, let me say from my standpoint, excuse me.
Reliable.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, I'm often given a choice. You know, when I formulate products, they say, "Do you want the stuff? You know, whatever it is, you want lycopene, or do you want Lycomato, which is a very specific brand that designates maybe higher quality of production, and or there's specific studies that were performed with that." And it doesn't necessarily mean that the other
is an Israeli product, and it's the basis for many of the clinical studies on lycopene, and it's found in numerous brands because they're selling it as a branded ingredient like Intel is inside.
Yes, yes, indeed. But it doesn't, however, invalidate other products that contain lycopene. It just, you know, maybe an additional measure of reassurance about the product.
That's correct. And the other criteria I would look for if I were a consumer or telling consumers, I'd look for third-party certification. There are third-party certification organizations in this country that like NSF, there's NPA, which is the trade association, but they claim to have a third-party activity where they actually go and check the GMP compliance and the laboratories and the manufacturing facilities, but they don't always actually test the actual product itself. They often just test the factory or facility in which the product is actually manufactured, but at least a baseline that, you know, the product is at least manufactured according to certain quality standards of GMP, but it may not be necessarily a vindication of the product itself, unfortunately. So some of these third-party third-party logos, certification logos, can be useful. But at the same time, quite frankly, Ron, some of the best quality products in this country, as far as I'm concerned, do not subscribe to some of these third-party certification programs. So a lack of a third-party certification program seal doesn't necessarily impugn the integrity of the product. The presence of the seal might give students, consumers, some degree of assurance that it's probably made in at least a proper facility.
You know, and I'll add another layer of discernment, which is, and it sounds a little self-serving, but it's true, is that if a product is recommended by a health practitioner, you know, we in the health field, I spend an enormous amount of my time researching this stuff, looking at stuff, and sometimes I'll look at a supplement and say, gee, you know, I found something better. You know, I think it's higher quality. It's not just cheaper. It's better. The studies are better. It's purer. And then I will opt for that as something, as an offering to my patients and listeners as something that, you know, I've done the due diligence on. And I'm not, I got to say, this is not yet rocket science. You know, we both know that controversies abound in this field, and there's no final word on precisely which formulation of one or another herb is the best, the purest, the most efficacious. But we do our best to make that cut.
And you also, remember, you're dealing with herbs, you're dealing with plant materials. They have multiple chemistry, they're very chemically complex, they're not like a single chemical like an aspirin or some kind of a drug where it's a single, often synthetic or even natural chemical. So you're dealing with chemical complexity, you're dealing with variability, standardization is a challenging, depending on how you want to define standardization in this case. And a lot of people expect the herbs that they're looking for, or the herbs they see in the marketplace, to be all the same between across the board, that all ginkgos are the same, because they see them sometimes as if they were like drugs, and they're all the same, and they're not. I mean, aspirin is the same whether it's St. Joseph or Bayer or the house brand. But ginkgos aren't the same whether it's brand A, brand C, or the house brand. They can be three different types of qualities of ginkgo.
I have one additional question that I have to ask on behalf of my listeners, which is, so we shouldn't buy anything from China? That's actually a prevailing view. A lot of people say, well, if it's I'm going to check if it's from China, I don't want any part of it. What's the story on that?
That's a prevalent understanding, and it's legitimate. It's understandable why people have that after all that melamine scandal we had in 2004, I think it was, or whenever it was, 2006. It was about Chinese people, adding a chemical that peaks under certain kinds of UV testing as it looks like nitrogen. And, I mean, it is nitrogen, so they think it's protein. So they put it in pet food, and they put it in infant formula, unfortunately. And the head of the State Drug Administration, the equivalent of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, was actually shot, executed because of that problem.
We haven't lost any FDA commissioners in the United States yet to that.
We haven't lost any through execution by the government, that's for sure. But that's what happened in China. And here's the thing. So a lot of people are legitimately and justifiably concerned about the quality of ingredients coming from China, and yet I also know that some of the bigger companies and other ones are actually setting up and have a working relationship with various facilities and manufacturing and processing plants in China where they have their own people on the ground. You know, the Americans have their own representatives on the ground, usually from the company, whenever there is any of their product being processed in these facilities to ensure that full compliance, proper identity, lack of contamination, full GMP compliance, etc. And so there's many good quality products coming out of China. It's just that the companies that are buying them and or actually operating in joint ventures with them over there have to exercise increased levels of due diligence to ensure quality.
It's supply chain management is the term.
Correct.
Applied to that. And, you know, I if you carry that argument to its extreme, you know, please chuck that iPad that you wrote the email to me on about Chinese products and take your clothes off, throw them in the garbage, and probably throw out about half the furniture in your apartment,
because
that's, we are in a, A very, very international world economy. Okay. Well, any other salient points you want to make on this? You know, the message I think is clear is that you know, questions have arisen, but by no means is this a conclusive indictment of the industry as a whole, or even of these products, because there are some questions to be answered.
Well, there are problems in the supply chain of the herbal industry, and there are problems with some herbal dietary supplement products. So it's understandable by Attorney General Schneiderman was looking in this area to try to see if he can help consumers differentiate bad, good products from bad products. Unfortunately, based on what we know currently and based on our knowledge of the herbal marketplace and the knowledge of the analytical methodology that's available, it appears that Professor Schneider, A.G. Schneiderman and his staff relied on a on inadequate testing and have not done all their due diligence that we would expect from elected public servants. And in that sense, I believe that it may turn out, we don't know what's going to happen yet, it may turn out that this whole thing could look like the egg on somebody's face.
Yeah.
And we're not going to need DNA testing to determine that is egg on the face.
Yeah, and I have, you know, I would echo that, is that that may not redound to his credit. Right now, he looks like a knight in shining armor, valiantly protecting the consumers of New York. But I think when the whole story is told, I think it's going to seem like an amateurish rush to judgment and a poisoning of the well unnecessarily to the detriment of consumers who are really trying to take their health into their own hands in a responsible way. So
yeah,
that,
and that's the downside from your perspective and mine as well, because there are a great deal of good quality dietary supplement products, herbal and otherwise, that have clinical backgrounds to them. Many of them have been used traditionally for many, many years, historically, with safety and a significant degree of benefits, and many consumers can benefit and do benefit from this class of goods. It's been shown to be a very safe class of consumer goods, very few adverse reactions of any serious type in relation to the total use, high level of safety compared to other consumer goods. And yet what's happening here is this reduces consumer confidence in this area. But, you know, at the end of the day, this could be one of those crises where it's a dangerous opportunity, and the opportunity could be increased awareness and heightened sense of fair play and quality control by members of industry that have not maybe been playing up to the highest levels possible. And it might be that this could end up being a good thing in the long run for industry and for consumers as well. We'll see.
Well, I certainly hope so.
Independent of how A.G. Schneiderman's tests actually end up becoming determined, because somebody's going to test these products. They are testing them, and it may be that they might find him correct. It's also very possible and most likely they're going to find a lot of problems with his tests. But at any rate, the fact is that people are talking about this, but they need to talk about it in a way that's rational and well-informed and not knee-jerk. And here's the big problem. People watch CSI on TV and they hear about DNA testing as being the arbiter of
right.
whether somebody was in somebody's apartment or whatever. And so they see in the paper that this was tested by DNA, and they automatically believe that this is the ultimate test of authority and authenticity. And in this particular case, it may not have been.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much for a very authoritative discussion of this important subject. And our Intelligent Medicine call to action, check out American Botanical Council. You can find them on the web at herbalgram.org. Please follow them and subscribe. You'll get lots of useful consumer information there. Thanks very much, Mark Brumenthal, for joining us today.
Thank you, Rod. I appreciate it. Thanks for the invitation.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.